when you feel like there's nowhere else to go. Get up and take the high road. When you feel like you're all alone, get up and take the high road. Oh, Lord.
Take the high road to the valley. Take the high road to the valley. Take the high road to the valley. If you want to reach the promised land.
That is it. Hello, Earthlings. Here we are again, seven revolutions later, on the left side of the Great Divide, balancing into another Express Yourself. I'm Luke Nessler, and that was the Blind Boys of Alabama performing Take the High Road with a little help from the Oak Ridge Boys. That's the title track to their 2011 CD. For 80 years, the Blind Boys of Alabama have sung praises to the Lord. They have steadfastly resisted taking the secular path in their music career, unlike compatriots like Sam Cooke. And yet here they are, performing for adoring audiences around the world and recording albums with country stars, blues musicians, and indie rock artists, steadily increasing their audience. I spoke with Ricky McKinney last Tuesday before their four-day Colorado tour brings them to the Wheeler Opera House tonight. So they are taking the high road through our valley to the Wheeler in just a few hours. Ricky McKinney joins the show now. Hi, Ricky.
How you doing, Luke? So glad to be here.
Oh, likewise. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Looking forward to coming to Colorado and having a wonderful time.
I'll bet you've been here a few times, haven't you?
Yeah, we've been blessed to come to the city a few times, but every time we come back, we always come back feeling good and ready to do it all over again.
You get a little bit closer to God when you're in Colorado, I guess. Literally.
Yeah, something like that. Attitude, huh?
Yeah. Well, first, I want to start by asking you about a couple of your founding members. I don't think either of them tour with you very much. How is Clarence Fountain doing, and also Jimmy Carter?
Okay, Clarence Fountain, he's doing good. He's in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He has been on dialysis for a few years, so he doesn't travel with us as much. But Jimmy Carter, he's alive and well. He'll be right there in Colorado with the Blind Boys of Alabama. He's still traveling. He's still looking good, singing good, and just having a good time.
Speaking of looking good, every video I watched of you guys are dressing pretty sharp out there.
Well, we try hard.
No, you guys look really great, but I'm really happy that Jimmy Carter is still touring. That's pretty impressive. I think he's as old as my mother. Is he 85?
Well, I'm just going to say he is in his 80s, still, you know, he's still traveling, still singing, and going out into the audience and shaking people's hands, and we're just, you know, we're having a good time.
Well, you know, he must love what he does.
Oh, yeah, sure does.
That's what keeps you going after all these years. And I just have to say that, you know, that's pretty impressive. I know that I'm thinking of Pinetop Perkins, who recently passed several years ago, but he was 93, I think, when he passed, and he was still touring up until the very end. That's so impressive to me.
Right. Jimmy has always said that as long as he can, when he's able, he will be touring with the Blind Boys of Alabama. So we look to have him here for many more years to come.
Well, Ricky, I know that you joined the band. You're sort of a relative newcomer. I mean, you joined in 1989, so it's been 27 years. My God, that's a long time already yourself. But you joined the band when it pretty much started its popular ascendancy, didn't you?
Well, you know, I actually have been playing with the Blind Boys on and off ever since the early 70s. So I've been playing with the Blind Boys on and off for about 40 years, but I've been a member for about 28 years.
Huh, 40 years, that's impressive. What's even more impressive, though, is the fact that it began in the late 30s, early 40s.
1939, at the Talladega Institute for the Blind, with a group called the Happy Land Jubilee Singers. And in 1944, they became the Blind Boys of Alabama.
Huh. Because they were in competition with the Blind Boys of Mississippi.
You know the story. The Blind Boys from Alabama and the Blind Boys from Mississippi were in a concert together, and the name stuck.
Huh. You know, times were very different back then. Did you get some of the stories about, the early years of the Blind Boys of Alabama?
Yeah, I've been doing Clarence there since I was about 4 years old. I know a lot about the Blind Boys. They had a lot of opportunities to go and sing soul music. They decided they want to sing gospel. And, the South was rough, but people, when you had a disability of some sort, people were a little bit different towards you. They treated you a little bit better from time to time. But they did sleep in hotels that were in different hotels. You get different restaurants, but they still slept and ate, so everything worked out good.
I guess the reason it worked out good is because they held true to their mission, which was serving the greater glory of God.
That's it.
Huh. You know, some of these songs that you sing, I'm sure you must have sang them hundreds of times, and I wonder if there are some times where the spirit is really moving, and if so, what does that feel like? And do you all know it at the same time when you're on stage singing those songs?
Well, you know, what's from the heart reaches the heart. And we sing songs like Look Where You Brought Me From and Amazing Grace. Those songs just touch the heart.
That's the secret, touching the heart. I think you have a good strategy. You touch the heart first, and you move the heart, and then you move their butts. Is that a fair?
It all works together.
It sort of does, doesn't it? I mean, but I have to say, I was interested in reading that back when Sam Cooke decided to leave the Soul Stirrers and become a pop musician, that the same deal was offered to the Blind Boys of Alabama, but they didn't take it.
That's true. Specialty Records offered the Blind Boys the same deal. They decided to stay with the gospel.
And you've done that all the way through, but you're also known for collaborations with a lot of popular musicians, country musicians, blues musicians, and just recently indie rock musicians with Justin Vernon, Bon Iver. Has that always been a conscious strategy for the Blind Boys of Alabama to increase their range and their audience?
Right. The Blind Boys have always believed that people need people, and working together works. So it has proven to be something that is really true.
And you were never afraid of going into nightclubs. I know that a lot of people in the gospel world said, what are you doing in nightclubs? But you guys decided that that's where you needed to be. Is that right?
Well, that's true. It's not about where you go, how you go in, it's how you come out. So we try to go in and come out the same way.
Huh. Do you guys still rehearse?
Yeah, we do a lot of rehearsing from time to time, but most of our rehearsals are doing our sound checks.
Oh, I see. Okay. You know, a lot of the videos that I've watched, Ricky, the harmonies are so seamless that I can't, it's hard to tell who's singing what part. Are you, I know you're not the falsetto. That's, who is that? That's Paul, right?
Right, that's true.
But which part are you singing?
I usually sing the they call it just the middle part, and it's second tenor. I sing second tenor, and also I sing baritone from time to time. But now they allow me to sing some lead, so I'm kind of all over the place.
Huh. I also know that you're one of the arrangers in the band.
Right. I've had opportunity to arrange a few songs, and along with Jimmy Carter and Joey Williams, and we've had a great producer, Chris Goldsmith, wonderful booking agency, and a great management company, Blind Ambition. So all those people working together has made it great.
Huh. That's really interesting. You're also a drummer. Are you still drumming on stage with the Blind Boys of Alabama?
I'm not drumming during the Christmas tour, but I am the original drummer for the Blind Boys of Alabama. And my website is Ricky McKinney Experience, and you can check me out playing drums. But next year, I'll be back playing drums with the Blind Boys.
You say Christmas show, and I understand that's what we'll be seeing at the Wheeler Opera House in Aspen. What is a Blind Boys of Alabama Christmas show like? What are you singing, secular songs as well as, like, are you singing Good King Wenceslas, or are you singing Silent Night?
Well, yeah, the Blind Boys Christmas tour started about a few years ago, and every year since then we've been going out. During this time, doing a Christmas tour, we sing songs like Silent Night, Go Tell It on the Mountain, When Was Jesus Born? A lot of those songs that people have been doing for a long time. Merry Christmas to You is a new song that Paul Beasley is singing that you're going to really enjoy. And I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas, that's one that I sing with the group. And then we stop back and go back and sing some good gospel music.
So
everybody can enjoy.
So you're mixing in some gospel tunes with holiday tunes.
Yeah, we start off with our gospel tunes, then we do our holiday tunes, and then we go back and take them all home with some more gospel music.
Is there a set list every show, or do you guys change it up every show?
It's sort of a set list, but if the Spirit comes, we have to change it up. So if the people show they enjoy what we're doing, We're going to give them everything they need. If you come feeling sad, we're going to make you feel good.
Well, I imagine you guys have honed your listening skills to the nth degree. How do you know when the spirit moves? How does that work?
Well, it's something on the inside to try to move to the outside. That's all I can tell you.
Huh. Do you know right away, or does it take a while?
Well, when it hits you, you know right away.
And so when you feel that, what happens on stage? You all sort of lock in? You all sort of conjoin? What happens?
Well, when the spirit comes, everybody, you can feel it. You can tell it in the reaction of the people. And no matter, you know, nothing from nothing leaves nothing. So we try to put out something. And if you put out something, you're going to feel something. So you'll know, because we're going to give it all we got.
Well, you're known for that, and you've been known for that for years. What happens when the spirit isn't moving? How does that happen?
Well, the spirit doesn't linger within about all the time, but we give it, you know, you got to search for it, so we put it out there, and if you give it a chance, it'll come on in. So every night we sing hard, and we make ourselves available, so we just have a good time.
I'm wondering how, Ricky, a man of faith, looks at the world today, all the things going on politically and socially. How does the world look to you and to the Blind Boys of Alabama?
Well, you know, it's like this. We don't really get into religion or politics, but I can tell you this much. The world has not changed. It's just the people in the world. And if the people in the world would come together, humble themselves, and get on one accord, everything's going to be all right.
I wonder if music can play a part in that.
Music always plays a part, because music is a universal message that everybody can understand.
Huh. Huh. Wow. What, I guess your part, this, you say you're touring Colorado right now, or will be this week, I guess. What are the audiences giving you these days? It seems like everything's very tenuous and poignant. Are you guys feeling that? Is that what you're feeling from the audiences who come to holler and shout?
Well, you know, people are going through something. And some have been disillusioned. Some just don't know which way to turn, and a lot of things are going on. But the main thing, that people are coming, reaching to feel something. I've heard a lot of people say when they left the Blind Boys concert, they didn't feel the same. So what we do is come to spread the good news, and hopefully somebody will leave feeling a little better than they did when they came to the concert.
Huh. What about you guys? Does that work for you guys too?
Yeah, it works for us, because, you know, anytime people, I'm always at the end of the concert, you can always meet me at the record table. But when people come and tell me how much they enjoyed the program and how the music made a difference in their life, it gives me the will to keep on keeping on.
Huh. Who was the one who thought of singing Amazing Grace to the tune of House of the Rising Sun?
We had a producer. He thought of that. His name was John Shalhoub. John Shalhoub, he brought that song to the Blind Boys, and at first we thought it was the greatest thing in the world. And then when we sang to it in our harmonies, we decided that, hey, this just might work. And it's been a great song ever since.
Well,
the words is what makes the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody told me there's a radio station in Florida that plays nothing but Amazing Grace, all different versions.
Well, that's a new one to me, too. So when you find out, hit me up.
Yeah. Well, there must be a million versions, but I'll bet yours is the only one sung to House of the Rising Sun. And somehow it works. It leaves me with a sense of, I don't know, foreboding somehow. There's something about that melody and that tune that is a little bit on the dark side. No?
Well, the melody gets your attention, and the word is what brings you on in. See, in order to reach out to somebody, you got to get their attention. So the melody gets the attention, and the word touches the heart.
Okay. Is that the way you approach every song?
Every song.
Huh. Do you guys compose your own tunes?
Yeah, we have been working on some songs, but we have composed a lot of tunes throughout the years. You know, Blind Boy has been recording for years and years and years, and all of the recordings that we did up into year 2000 were Blind Boy's records. And they were produced by the Blind Boys, and we just started using outside producers in the year 2000 with Chris Goldsmith.
Okay, so it's the producers that bring a lot to these projects. All of these collaborations, like with the country musicians, and that great duets CD that you did with singing with Solomon Burke and Lou Reed. John Hammond, Toots Hibbert even. How about that?
Right. You know, the Blind Boys have been a gospel group and still are a gospel group. So we really didn't know very many people in other genres. So different producers came up with different people and different songs. And the songs were good songs, and they were nice people. So we didn't mind singing the song.
Okay, so now do all of you get together and decide, yes, we're going to do this, or no, we're not going to do that? Or is Jimmy the leader and makes those decisions?
Well, Jimmy is the group leader for the Blind Boys of Alabama. I'm the business manager for the Blind Boys of Alabama, and Jody Williams is the music director for the Blind Boys. But we all come together, listen to the songs, and decide what we want to do.
Ricky McKinney, are you working to bring the next generation into the Blind Boys of Alabama? And if so, how?
You know, our ears always stay open and our minds stay open. And hopefully there are going to be some young people out there that will come to the program or hear the Blind Boys somewhere and want to be a part of it, want to carry on the legacy of the Blind Boys of Alabama, because I am truly... think this group has been favored by God to do what we're doing. So we just keep our eyes and ears open to hear from somebody or that they like what we're doing. And if they are qualified to keep it going, hopefully after I'm gone, there'll still be somebody that wants to be the Blind Boys of Alabama.
Well, I guess my question is, at some point, God willing, or God not willing, I guess, Clarence and Jimmy will pass the scene, and what happens then to the Blind Boys of Alabama?
Well, if Jimmy or Clarence happen to be called on home, like Billy Bowers, and there's been many people that passed on from the Blind Boys of Alabama, George Scott, who was the Jubilee King, the first guitar player for the Blind Boys, Johnny Fields, who was the manager and bass singer for the Blind Boys, Alice Thomas, he was a baritone singer. A lot of people have passed on, but the group lived on. So I got Blind Boys in my heart, and as long as I'm here, I'm around, it's going to be a Blind Boys of Alabama, and I'm going to keep searching while I'm here to find people that, after we're gone, you will be able to carry on the torch. But if not, somebody look back in history and say, that was a group called the Blind Boys of Alabama.
And they were superb. Ricky McKinney, I want to thank you so much for joining us for 20 minutes here on KDNK, and look forward to seeing you in Aspen at the Wheeler Opera House.
Looking forward to be there, Luke. Looking forward to meeting you also. I want to tell everybody to tell somebody, don't miss it when the boys are back in town.
and they are back in town in 3 hours. And as of 3 hours ago, there were only about 30 seats left. So you better hop to it. For tickets, you can visit AspenShowTix.com or call 920-5770 for more information. Visit WheelerOperaHouse.com. Stay with us. A Water Protector up next on Express Yourself. Will Evans should be familiar to KDNK listeners as the host of a public affairs program here on KDNK called Shifting Gears. Will also serves our community as an elder with comprehensive insights into the problems of our community and nation and planet. Will just returned from a visit to Standing Rock, and he has a lot to say about it. Will Evans, did you see Avatar?
I did see Avatar.
At the end of that movie, I was compelled to stand up and go, yes, the natives finally won one. Is that what's happening at Standing Rock?
It's the beginning. It's the beginning. I think it's a very significant event. A woman said to me before I went, and I had some very helpful conversations with people who'd been there, and they said that in addition to the water protectors, there all kinds of people who are saying, finally, there's a place and something I can stand tall for. And so there's a very diverse group of people gathered in Standing Rock, and it's built around this core of the cloak of eldership holding this field, and the water protectors taking a very activist role, but a lot of people holding space for them and supporting them and caring for them, because we're really seeing the sad manifestation of particularly the immature male with ice in his heart who can't figure out life-sustaining commerce.
How are the elders keeping that space? How is that working? How do they do that?
Well, that's what they know how to do. That's what they've been doing for thousands of years. And that's why I went there, because I carried messages from a very small population of water carriers in the South Pacific. And they recognize what's happening there and the stature of these people. But it's in transition, because I was there on the day that the announcement was made from the Corps of Engineers. And the next day, there was a full-on North Dakota blizzard. And so, you know, there's a season. And these people are not disconnected. They're totally connected. So elders know what it means when winter has arrived. And we had a very, I can't speak for North Dakota, but I can speak for here that we had a very lovely long fall and winter is now here. Well, when you're an indigenous population connected to the earth at the level they are, you do what everybody else in nature does in winter, and you back off and hunker down and survive and don't spend your juice unnecessarily. My understanding is that there are young people who are going to step in and hold that camp, but that it's not under the direct management, and management's an inadequate word for what goes on there, because, you know, it was straightforward indigenous timing and activity. And you would hear that such and such is going to happen about this time. And it would evolve and change. And it would be everything from the veterans ceremony because of the storm is going to be at the casino and the hotel. And then that evolved. And they were continually making decisions for the benefit of the whole population and all the guests and all the people who were there for the well-being of the whole people and for the children's children. So this is a different kind of leadership, and you step into that world, and it's a marriage of magic and the ordinary. But it's continually changing. And so you'd hear these announcements, and at the end they would say, but the final decision will be made by the elders. And of course, that, as I explained, the elders, from what I can gather, have gone into winter mode, because this is going to be, you know, some of it's going to be maybe in court or however they're going to maneuver. But I don't think they're naive that the pipeline people have given up.
Mm-hmm. You were there the day, you say you were there the day that that decision came down from the Army Corps of Engineers. I wonder if you could describe the feeling in the camp on that day.
Well, it was one of celebration, and the announcement was accompanied by, you know, there was no filming during the ceremonies, and the announcement was made, the ceremony is over, take out your cameras, this is a celebration. And then within an hour, there was an announcement from the pipeline company that they weren't giving up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You said something about the congruence of the magic and the ordinary. I wonder if that blizzard is a manifestation of that suddenly appearing the way it did.
That's pretty complicated, and I've had conversations about that blizzard, but I don't think we want to try and dive that direction.
No, no,
no.
Oh, but that's the juicy part, Will Evans.
Well, I went as a representative for this South Pacific population of the oldest water carriers I know. So I went as a container of water, because humans are mostly water, life is mostly water, and it innately stands tall. You don't have to teach a child to stand up and walk. You don't have to teach a plant to stand up and turn toward the sun. So this is an innate quality of water manifesting in life. And the ancient way of people who are connected to nature is living in this zone of magic flowing into the ordinary and the ordinary flowing into magic. So it was the camp was a combination of those two. And it was also an experience of people who were in overload and just had to say no. And this magical hospitality of people I've never met inviting me into their camp and offering me a cot as an elder and people guiding me around the camp. I drove alone, so I have some pain down my right leg. So I was hobbling around on my walking stick, dragging my sled full of gifts. And three young women adopted me and just guided me around and showed me where things were. And finally, this young girl who was part Vietnamese said to me, do you want to go see the sacred fire? And I said, yes. I had been there, but I wanted to go with her. And so there was a large crowd gathered around the fire. And I've never had this experience before, but she would walk behind me and she would say, make way for the elder.
Hata Yo, clear the way. Clear the way. This congruence of the magic and the ordinary fascinates me. Is that a feeling that the non-indigenous visitors to Standing Rock was a part of, or were they mostly clueless?
I think it was probably more common than you would expect because it was so pervasive. And there are some people who just are still there because they've had a taste of it, and living otherwise is a pretty sad substitute.
Yeah, I'll bet it is. Did you, Will Evans, did you witness the must have been extraordinary scene of the Wesley Clark's son apologizing and asking forgiveness for all the depredations of the U.S. Army on the indigenous?
I was not there to witness that, but I experienced enough other magic that I know it was all part of what was happening.
Wow. It strikes me that you're not quite ready to talk about a lot of that magic. Perhaps you're processing it still. But that's what fascinates me. And to me, looking at Standing Rock from a distance and talking with people like yourself who have been there and have returned, it's a very watershed moment in certainly the cultural history and maybe the political history, too, of this continent. And I just wonder if what I'm feeling from a distance is what you're trying to describe here, that magic and the ordinary together. Is that your sense, having been there?
Very much so.
Part of my appreciation of indigenous ways of life is that concept of synchronicity. And I know that synchronicity is something, well, it's something that I've experienced a lot of in my own life. And evidently, there was a good bit of that at Standing Rock. I mean, the idea of the blizzard coming in when it did. And I just wonder if that's a description of the magic that you're tap dancing around here. Is it synchronicity? What is it? What is going on? What is it that I'm feeling from a distance and you saw up close? What is it? What is it?
Well, it's the the beauty in us as part of nature. And it's not something in heaven. It's right here on earth, and it's in our hearts, and it's what we're all capable of. And it happens when people step out of fear and into the flow. And so the nature of water is flow. Water is flowing through all of us. And we can become in resonance with the rhythm of nature and the water. And life is beautiful when that happens. And we are products of an educational system that brainwashes us in contest behavior, so that I have to get cold-hearted, I think, to go out and live in the world. Well, everybody who's had enough time at Standing Rock to experience that magic and beauty realizes they have a choice. And that we all have choices, and that we may not want to just sit down and shut up as we watch things unfold, because life is still beautiful enough that we want that for our children's children. And that is the indigenous worldview and the indigenous way. And this is, you know, this is the population that Custer attacked, and various alliances came in and made a very memorable moment for everyone. And this is a similar but totally different process, because this is like a Gandhi march to the sea in India, but it's happening in America, and people and resources are flooding in there. Like, suddenly everybody has a memory of what it can mean to be a human being.
Hmm. Wow. That's remarkable. Gives me goosebumps.
It's not complicated. It's not impossible. It's remembering, and it happens just like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you begin to move that way through the crowd. The hotel was just jammed because they couldn't turn people away. The roads were impossible. And so there were people in the hallways all the way up. Hmm. And they turned the big meeting room into a, you know, a place where people rolled out their bags. And I think a lot of the camp came down there for that time and sought refuge.
Is there a general understanding, Will, among the people that were there, that the message needs to go forth from that place into places that don't know what this magic is? And if so, how does that happen? How do we carry this energy into the culture at large?
It's alive in my heart. So I'm sending it to you as I'm in conversation with you. I'm carrying it with me because I've just had a transfusion.
I see. So you're saying that all the people who were there are taking that into their own lives and places and spreading it that way.
Yeah. And wow. We had a meeting last night about what's the next step for kind of the collective Carbondale relationship with Standing Rock. And in the little time I spoke, I started out by just whispering to the person on my left and sending around the circle the message, water is life. And then we said it, Miniwishoni in Lakota, and pass it on. Because people either recognize that truth, or they've been so damaged that they shrink and contract at that truth, and they can't take it in. And we would like to be able to live in a way where we can have compassion for them, and we can figure out how not to contract in the presence of a bully, because that's what these water protectors were able to do. And they're very courageous people, because some of them were just brutalized needlessly. And yet, who does that? That's a little man trying to make himself big by shooting rubber bullets into a little girl and then throwing a grenade at her when she can't move. And that's a sadness, but these young people are so on fire with what they experience up there that they're stepping into that sometimes at real peril.
There's a general sense, though, of nonviolence, right?
Oh, it's a Gandhi
yes.
type process.
Yes.
It's all nonviolent.
Yes.
And there's no violence encouraged, accepted, or tolerated by the Lakota elders. I mean, you don't belong there if you've got a violent agenda.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to go into that camp.
Uh-huh.
I heard an interesting story. Four Maori came up from New Zealand and, you know, 13-hour plane ride and then another hours to get to probably to Bismarck and then the car ride. And they had come with the intention of doing a haka, which is a ferocious preparation for a rugby game. They're sensitive enough. They felt what was going on in camp, and they said, you don't do a haka here. Because it's got a ferocious, violent element, and they could sense and feel this place of peace and love that is alive and real, and it's now hunkered down for winter. So it's not a time to visit unless you're experienced in Arctic camping, because you don't want to show up there and be a drain and a drag and get diverting people from what they're doing, surviving, to treat your frostbite.
Yeah, yeah. Will you go back next summer?
Depends what my instructions are.
Mm-hmm. Your instructions. That's really beautiful. Thank you, Will Evans.
My pleasure, Luke. Pass the word. Water is life.
Water is life. Ho.
Ho.
The beauty in us as part of nature. Thank you, Will Evans. This harvest of good-heartedness Will speaks about is happening all around us. Can you feel it? It feeds our souls, and you don't have to look very hard or very far to find it. This is the true protest against the incoming administration, and this is the power and the glory of Standing Rock. May it be flow. May it be so. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.